Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
My local supermarket just happens to be an Asda, and I was in there doing food shopping, and a bloke came up to me and said, what are you doing in here? And I said, well, I've got to eat. Like, what do you think? Where do you think my food comes from?
This week on Walking the Dog, Ray and I went for a stroll with comedian Angela Barnes and her beautiful cockapoo, Tina. Angela is a hugely popular stand-up, known for her appearances on shows like Live at the Apollo and Mock the Week. And she also does a brilliant history podcast with writer John O'Farrell called We Are History, which is honestly fantastic, so do check it out. For more info on Angela, go to angelabarnescomedy.co.uk. I'll stop talking now and hand over to the woman herself. Here's Angela and Tina and Ray Ray.
Come on, Ray. Do people think he's a girl because he's got a pink harness? In Brighton, you'll be fine.
What a start, Angela Barnes.
I get that because Tina had, until recently, she had a blue harness. And people would say, oh, isn't he a lovely dog? She's got a blue harness. Doesn't mean she's a he.
Hi, Tina. What do you think of Raymond?
He seemed to be slightly indifferent. Oh, hang on. We're having a wee.
Going to the bathroom on the first day. Didn't even close the door.
You say hello to Raymond. Where's Ray?
So, let's go down here, Angela.
Try and find the little cafe. There's a signpost there. That'll help.
You know me so well, Angela Barnes.
I know you need a coffee, Emily. I know this podcast isn't going to start properly until you've had some caffeine.
I like that I'm the high maintenance one. I mean, you're the guest.
It's very rare when I'm in a room and I'm not the high maintenance one. I'm just enjoying it. Here we are.
Oh, yes. I'll just put Ray's lead on because I want to be liked by everyone here. Do you know what I mean?
I do.
So, Angela Barnes, wonderful, hilarious, brilliant stand-up comedian, Angela Barnes. I'm so thrilled to have you on Walking the Dog.
It's lovely to be back again. Thank you for having me back.
And we're in Brighton.
We are.
Specifically, we're in Stanmer Park.
Stanmer Park. Lovely Stanmer Park.
And we're with your beautiful cockapoo, Tina.
We are indeed. She's having a good old sniff at the moment. I think there might be... Yes, I knew that was imminent. She did this last time we did the podcast. The moment we started recording, she had a poo.
Come on then, Angela. Let's go. These are the tea rooms.
Yeah, I'm just going to find a bin for... I won't take the poo into the tea room. There's a bin up there, I think, so I might just go and deposit this.
Come on, Raymond.
Don't eat the plants, Tina.
So we've got to the tea rooms. What can I get you?
Lovely. I'll have a mocha, if I may. Get me. Been in Brighton 6 years, and I'm ordering a mocha.
You've really changed, Angela
really
Barnes.
Changed. Just saves putting sugar in it.
I remember the days when you were happy with the Coronation Street pensioner. Milk, two sugars.
Milk, two sugars, builder's tea. But no, I'll have a mocha, please, darling.
All right. So one mocha, one latte. Perfect. Right, Angela Barnes.
Right, Emily Dean. Here we go.
I'm relying on you to take me in the right direction.
Oh, gosh, don't do that. I have zero sense of direction. I feel like this is just going to be walking around a garden centre, so maybe we should go out that way.
And do you know what? I think we're still too young for that.
Yes, we are. Come back in another 10 years. And we'll walk around a garden centre and I'll tell you all about my funeral plans. That's what you do, isn't it? And we'll get a free pen.
Yeah. I like the concept of the garden centre. I feel...
We're not there yet.
I don't think I'm there
yet. We're not there yet, no. Well, I don't have a garden for a start, so it's sort of wasted on me.
Well, I do, but mine looks more like if Sid Vicious and Nancy Spungen had been left in charge of a garden.
You're rewilding. That's what you're doing. It's very fashionable now, Emily, rewilding. It's fine.
It really does look like that, Angela.
That's what you can tell people, though. Oh, my rewilded garden. Do you like it?
I feel people walk in there and go, what happened? It's got those vibes. So I could not be more thrilled to be with you, Angela, in Brighton.
Oh, I'm glad you're here.
We're with the wonderful Tina.
We are.
Do you want to just remind me when Tina came into your life and why?
So Tina is five. She turned five on Christmas Day. She was born on Christmas Day. And we've had her since she was a little pup. So we've had her since she came to live with us in February 2019. So she was a sort of pre-pandemic dog. But she's very much a sort of pandemic dog because she suddenly had us at home 24/7 from when she was a year old. So she's quite a, what they call a Velcro dog, you know? She likes to be with us.
Don't you love those euphemisms?
I do love it. That, they say a needy dog, you mean? That's what you mean? Oh, there's a bin. Let me put this poo in it.
Oh, is that a beagle?
Oh, look at you.
Hello. Is that a beagle?
Yeah.
Oh, beautiful. What's her name?
Toby. She.
Toby, this is Raymond.
Oh, Toby. Oh.
Oh, Toby, I'm so sorry. I think Toby was a bit freaked out by Raymond.
Oh, Toby.
Am I Toby?
Hi, Toby.
You were telling me about Tina.
Yes.
So you got her...
Yeah, 2019, she's been with us.
Just pre-lockdown, essentially.
Pre-lockdown, about a year before. And, we were very... I always wanted a dog. And my husband was a bit ambivalent, but it was a deal-breaker for me. So we got... And now he is absolutely... They're inseparable, really. Him and, I mean, if she had to choose between us, I'd be out the door. She absolutely loves him. And it's reciprocal. I sometimes, if I'm out gigging or on tour or whatever, and I come home late and they've gone to bed, Tina will be lying on my side of the bed and just sort of open one eye and look at me like, oh, the third wheel's back. You know.
And you didn't have dogs growing up, did you?
No. So I'm quite allergic to everything, as you can see by my weeping eyes now as we're walking past trees. And we never had dogs because of my allergies, because when I was growing up, you know, these sort of poodle crosses, it wasn't really known that that was a thing that was good for people with allergies. There were dogs in the family, so sort of cousins and aunties and uncles had dogs, but because of my allergies, my parents wouldn't let me have one. So I always wanted one. And then, you know, as I was an adult, life was just, with different jobs I had and being on the road and stuff, it just wasn't really conducive. And then I got to a point in my life where it was a bit more. You know, my husband works from home and makes life a lot easier.
And what does your husband do again?
My husband works in IT, so he works for a big department store.
I'm a bit jealous.
Yeah, it's quite nice having a husband not in the...
No, just 24/7 IT support.
Oh, there's that as well. Well, you'd think that, but... He's good at his little area of IT, but I use a Mac because I'm a tosser, and he doesn't. Yeah, he's Windows, so he's no good to me really. It's such a shame. It was such a sunny day here yesterday, and you've come today when it's a bit grey and drizzly.
Yeah, but you know what? You Brighton people, you always say that.
Honestly, it was lovely yesterday. It's like the comedy night where you have a tour show, and there's honestly we sold out last week. Honest. Yesterday they all came.
I think they should. That should be its twin town name. Honestly, it was lovely yesterday. Yeah. So you were saying, you were telling me about your husband, and you didn't have dogs when you were growing up. But I wonder if you could just remind me a bit about your childhood, just to give me a sense of it.
So I grew up in Kent, in Maidstone, in Kent. We had cats. My parents divorced when I was quite young. My mum remarried. I had a little brother who's 12 years younger than me. And actually, since we last met, he's made me an auntie now. So I've got a little niece, Laura.
I know your dad was a bit of a character, a colourful character.
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked about him before, didn't we? Ran a sex shop, was...
I love that he ran a sex shop. It's the best thing ever.
It is. It's quite a... People sort of... What, you went in there when your dad was in? He's like, yeah, but I was an adult. I wasn't... He didn't have me in there doing dildo stock takes with him when I was 14. You know, it wasn't like that. And it's funny because my dad, although my dad was very liberal and particularly in that area... Oh, hang on, Tina's doing another poo. He was sort of... Very liberal and laid back, but because I was his daughter, he wasn't necessarily like that with me, because I was his little girl, you know. So it's not like,
yeah,
you know, we weren't sort of some hippie family. It wasn't like that at all. But he enjoyed life, I think it's fair to say. Yeah. Great dad, not necessarily a great husband, probably.
When did your parents split up again?
So I was 9.
Yeah.
When they split. I'd sort of remember them together, but not much, really.
Yeah.
So my dad was very sort of larger than life and very colourful and fun. So I think it was also... And also my dad's mum lived with us. So my nan lived with us because my mum worked full time. So, you know, in terms of sort of taking me to school or cooking my dinners, it was my nan that did a lot of it, really. So yeah, my mum would sort of get home from work and then my dad would get home from work a bit later. So yeah, I felt sorry for my mum because when I think about that time, she's in it, but not as much as my nan, really, because she was doing the day-to-day. Oh, look at him.
So your dad...
Sorry, yes. So, he was the sort of life and soul, really. And, you know, you go to a family party or whatever and it'd be my dad telling stories and... kind of, he used to love, he had a motorhome, he loved camping, and you'd go to these campsites and he would make friends with anyone, my dad. He'd talk to anyone, make friends with anyone, and they'd all be sort of in his thrall, you know. And I think
was he quite tanned? I'm getting the picture.
He was blonde and tan.
Of course he was.
You know, drive with his arm out the window. One arm browner than the other.
Lovely short sleeve shirt in the summer.
Yeah.
Quite athletic, quite nice looking, I imagine.
Oh, I can't. Oh, I don't know. That's weird. He had half a tooth at the front. He had a broken tooth because when he was at school, he apparently was swinging his football boots round and knocked half a tooth out. And never got it replaced or anything. So he had this sort of... But it was kind of an enigmatic cracked tooth, I think. It was sort of... Yeah.
I know you've said, well, that's just what he did. You know, at that point when he ran the sex shop, it's yeah. like, well, it's great, because it's great comic.
It was great for a comedian starting out. There's definitely stories in there.
But there are some people that might have turned that into a misery memoir.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was, you know, there were tough times with my, yeah, with growing up and with divorce. It was different, I think, when did they divorce? In the 80s.
Why do you think they got divorced then? Because he was being a bit of a naughty boy.
I think they just got married young. They were very different, my parents. Like, I mean, I'm glad, I don't know how I happened, really, when I think about it, because they're so different. But my mum's great about, you know, she went through a lot with my dad, I think, but it was such a long time ago. And sort of when I got married a couple of years ago, my mum did a speech at my wedding. And she was, you know, she said really nice things about my dad, which she didn't have to say, you know, because it was obvious he wasn't there and it was a big person missing on the day.
Because we should say your dad's no longer with us.
He's no longer
sadly.
With us, no. So he died... Oh, gosh, 16 years ago nearly now. So I was 31 when he died. He was 60, which, you know, you used to think, oh, 60 is not a bad age. But now I'm like, well, that's not as far away from where I am as I'd like it to be, really. So I'm 47 now, which is the age my dad was when he had a quadruple heart bypass. Mm. So it does sort of make you just kind of, well, as you well know, you just know nothing's a given, is it? And... I was talking about it with someone the other day. We said it's that sort of, you lose a parent, I think, you suddenly have that realisation that everything that happens that's nice from then on will have something missing from it, bit, you know. And it sort of divides your life into two.
Well, I think it feels like also there's a very specific thing with a life interrupted. You don't just mourn... the past, you mourn the future you didn't have with them.
You do.
And those moments you're talking about, your wedding.
Exactly, you know? Those things that you just assumed they'd be there for. Mm. But there's sort of other ways to look at that. Like my dad, because of the way he was and how full of life he was, it would have been very difficult to watch my dad get old and sick. And I know it's always difficult to watch a parent get old and sick. But I'm sort of grateful that I didn't have to do that with my dad, in a way. Even though that would mean he would still be here, he would have hated it. And he always said he was going to drop dead at 60, because his father had. And he just felt that was what was going to happen to him, and it did. Tina, no. No. Oh, what is wrong with you eating mud? Oh, hello. Oh, you're, oh, Tina. It's all a bit excitable, isn't it?
Shih Tzu poodle.
Shih Tzu poodle. Oh, yes. He's an imperial Shih Tzu.
How are
you? Oh. Are they called Shih-Poo?
Yeah, Shih-Poos. Yeah.
Oh, bless you, little bundle.
Hello. I like a Shih Tzu poodle.
Yeah, they're quite cute. And they've got the poodle, so they're... Got a, well,
bit of a curl.
Yeah, I've got the curl. That is the trouble, though. Her fur is all matted.
Yeah, yeah, we have. That's why she's a cockapoo, but we keep her short because she just doesn't like being brushed.
Yes.
Oh, God. What's your... what's the...
Missy.
This
oh,
is Raymond.
Gorgeous, Missy.
Come on
there,
Missy.
So, yeah, so that's what led you to comedy, was the loss of your dad.
Well, yeah, it's that sort of, you know, life's too short, isn't it? It sounds like such a cliche, but it's true. It makes you sort of go, right, what are the things that... I was really not happy with my life when my dad died, you know, generally. You sort of feel guilty about it, though, don't you? I did, you know, Carrie Ad Lloyd has her podcast, The Griefcast, and it's a really lovely podcast, very positive sort of thing about grief. I talked to her about it, and she said, you know, when good things come out of you, you feel a bit guilty because you sort of go, God, if somebody gave me a big red button and said, press this and your dad would come back, you think, well, yeah, obviously I'd press it. But then I wouldn't have my career.
Yeah.
You know, so you just sort of go, oh, God, is my life only working out because my dad... You know, you feel sort of guilty for that.
I think that what happens is that you became a comedian. That's your whole... That's your career. That's your life. It's your passion. It's your vocation. Mm. You can't ever not connect that with your dad now.
No, exactly. And while it's... You sort of think, oh, it's sad you didn't get to see it, I'm also... I don't know if it would have happened if he'd still been here. So, yeah, that's like the sort of positive that, or the thing that he gave me is that, because I think the thing that upsets me or worries me is that my dad died worried about me because I was not happy and I hadn't found my thing. And, you know, I was sort of 31 when he died and he knew that I wasn't on the right path and wasn't. So I sort of feel sad that I can't go, oh, by the way, it works out all right, you know, I meet my husband and I have this career and I'm really happy. But then you sort of go, well, what happened had to happen for that to happen, you know, so maybe there's some level he knew that, I don't know. It's who knows what the grand plan is. I don't think there is one.
Well, I'm thrilled that you did decide to become a comedian, because prior to that you were in the sort of, you were a nurse and in sort of...
Yeah, I sort of worked in care and social care and I did lots of different jobs. Like, I think we talked about it last time. Yeah, I couldn't stick to one job for very long because of ADHD, and which I now know, which I didn't at the time. I just sort of... I got restless very easily and bored very easily. And I don't think bored's even the right word. I just... It was like it was more visceral than that. It was more sort of, I can't keep doing the same thing every day. Mm-hmm. And as you know, like a job like comedy, no 2 days are the same, you know? So it keeps you constantly interested and keeps you from getting in that rut of, oh, I can't face buying my sandwich from the same coffee shop with the same... And some people thrive on that. Some people need routine and need, you know, it's different, people need different things. That's why... Like, after the pandemic, when they're, you know, oh, people need to get back in offices, it's better for them. And you go, well, you know, it's better for some people. Mm. Whereas working from home is better for... It's almost like we're not all the same.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I feel very lucky to have found the job that suits my personality. I don't think everyone gets that lucky. And some people just have to...
But it took you a while.
It did take me a while. I was 33 when I did my first gig, which in, you know, stand-up years is pretty ancient. But just, you know, sometimes I look back and go, oh God, where could I have got to in my career if I'd started 10 years earlier? Or but the thing is, 10 years earlier I wouldn't have had anything to say, I wasn't in the right place, I wouldn't have had the confidence. I always think with people that go straight from, you know, they might go to university and then they go straight to a performing arts course or whatever, and then straight into acting, or that's great if that's the path that you can take and that works for you. But there's something really to be said, if you want to relate to the people who are sitting at home watching telly or watching the plays you're in or whatever, that life isn't very relatable. And if you are doing stand-up, that's part of your job, is to be relatable, right? So if you've never had a proper job, or you've never, you know, your whole life has been, I can't write jokes about, oh, you know what it's like when you're backstage at a gig. Well, no, your audience doesn't know what that's like. Or, you know, your audience doesn't necessarily live on trains and in hotels like we do. So you have to, I remember Sarah Millican saying to me really early on, she said, don't forget to live as well as work. Because if you don't live, you don't have anything to write about. Life's what you write about, you know. And you've got to fill that well with doing stuff that people do. And it's really important, you know, go on a Sunday, go to a boot fair, go to visit a castle or whatever. Don't let, you know, not live a life just because you found this job that doesn't have defined days of work.
Well, you're so right. What you don't want to be is the the comic stood up saying, private jets, right? What's the deal with them?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Let me be clear. I am not a multimillionaire comedian, you know, and I'm not famous. But I have things like, I was in my local supermarket, just happens to be an Asda, and I was in there doing food shopping, and a bloke came up to me and said, what are you doing in here? And I said, well, I've got to eat. Like, what do you think? Where do you think my food comes from? You know, before I was in this world, when I used to, it was an alien world to me. You know, I didn't know anyone who was on telly. I didn't have that background. So growing up, if I saw someone on telly, whatever they were doing, I sort of assumed they were a millionaire. Of course, I now know that's very not true.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Your career in comedy started essentially by running club nights, didn't it?
Yes, it did, yeah.
Because I felt that was your way of testing the water.
Yeah, well, I just loved comedy. Like, I was a bit of a comedy nerd. I loved watching it. My mum took me to see Victoria Wood Live when I was 14. And it was like watching magic. Just this woman and a microphone just had these people in the palm of her hand just losing their minds. And it was like, how's she doing that with words? She's not, you know, okay, she did use music and stuff as well, but I'd been to see bands and I'd been to see play. Oh my God, Tina. Sorry, something absolutely foul has just come out of my dog's backside.
Tina. So you always were slightly on the sidelines thinking, oh, I want to.
There's part of me that wanted to do it, but I just didn't think. And it all started, I was. So I used to be a member of a theatre group in South London, where I was living at the time. And my then boyfriend sort of harboured, he wanted to be a stand-up. He loved comedy as well. And he used to do sort of little open spots and things. And we started running a comedy night at the theatre. So that's how I got into that. Then when we split up and I moved to Brighton, I really missed it. So I started running a night in Brighton. And just getting comedians, it's like a sort of new material night, really, or new acts and new material. And I had, this was back in 2008, and I had my sort of regular MCs were people like Josh Widdicombe, James Acaster, Joel Dommett. So I had quite a good eye. And so it was then when they were all starting out, you know. And then, yeah, my dad died that summer, and I sort of went, right, actually, because he'd always said to me, oh, you should do it. You know, why don't you get up and do 5 minutes at your own night? And I thought, don't be stupid, I can't do that. And then, yeah, after he died, I thought, yeah, he's right, I should. This is what I want to do. And if I, you know, I'll try it. And if I'm no good at it, well, at least I know. And so, yeah, that's how it all... So I went and did a stand-up comedy course at Comedia in Brighton. And I actually... The people that I was working for, a charity in Brighton at the time, and they paid for me to do... I think they paid half for me to do the comedy course because they sort of went, oh, it'll help with your presentation skills and things like that. And then I end up, yeah, leaving that job to be a stand-up comedian. So don't think they quite expected that when they paid for half of the course.
Yeah.
But that's what happened, yeah.
Why do a lot of people from the medical profession, there are examples of doctors and nurses, transition into comedy?
Gallows humour's a thing, you know, that if you're working with people every day who are at a bad point in their life, be it that they're sick or their circumstances are bad, or, you know, that can rub off on you if that's your everyday. And so you have to, for your own sanity, develop a sense of humour about those things. You know, and some of the funniest things are said in hospital waiting rooms, staff rooms rather, or, but they're things that you couldn't, probably wouldn't repeat outside of those places. Because it's a valve, it's a release from what you've seen or what you've dealt with that day. And so for me, it's a sort of no-brainer really that you develop those muscles of finding the funny in the dark.
What groups of people were you working with, Angela?
I worked mostly with people with mental health problems and often with people with what they then called dual diagnosis, so a mental health problem and substance misuse was my main sort of area. But I also worked with homeless people, I worked with people with learning disabilities, I've sort of done lots of different...
So you must be very kind and compassionate.
Well, I have empathy and a sort of sense of unjust, you know, when things just aren't fair. And those groups of people, you know, there's a real sort of... People think they know why homeless people are homeless or why people take drugs or... But the fact is, every person on the street has a different story. And I worked with people who'd been lawyers or teachers or police officers or, you know, any one of us. It's only a few paychecks away from... disaster, you know. And I think a lot of people don't want to admit that because it's frightening. And so it's much easier to demonise those people and say, well, they made bad decisions or they brought this on themselves, because that way it can't happen to them. You know, money can't buy you happiness. It's only ever said by people who are comfortable. It's never said by somebody in the queue of a food bank, you know. The fact is, what money buys you is comfort to be happy. And that's part of the... You know, there's that what they call the hierarchy of needs, you know, and being warm, dry, fed, intellectually stimulated, all of those things are human, basic human needs. And if one of them's not met, you won't be happy.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we've built a world where money's the only thing that gets you some of those things.
Mm.
But some people are just driven by accumulation of wealth for wealth's sake rather than for what it can get you in terms of being comfortable. I have to remind myself sometimes, you know, because we all get, whatever you do, there's days when you're just fed up. And I have to sort of have a little word with myself and go, yeah, but look what you could be doing today. You know, look what you were doing 20 years ago. The fact is, in my job now, it's easier than any job I've ever had in terms of no one's life is going to be negatively affected because, you know, because I tell a joke, really. They might in the moment not like it or not laugh or whatever, but I'm not going to make a decision that's going to mean someone's kids are going to get taken away or they're going to lose their house or, you know, so none of it really matters. And that's, I think, been a real help to me because I can't get as worked up about some things in this world because it just doesn't matter. Mm. It's not, and I'm saying that from a very lucky position of, I'm also aware of how lucky I am that I do make, you know, a decent living doing what I do. And it's, I've sort of come into this industry at quite a lucky time. I mean, it could have been luckier, you know, if you were doing it in the 90s when there were 12 comedians. Obviously, there was more less competition. But I'm very aware of my good fortune, and that's not to say I don't work hard and I don't, but yeah, it gives you an awareness that, and I try not to forget that, you know, that I can basically pay my mortgage and buy the things that I, you know, I don't have particularly extravagant tastes. I drive a Toyota Yaris. I'm not, you know, I live in a two-bedroom flat. I don't live in a massive house. Or like I said before, you know, I think people assume that because you've been on telly, you must live in a mansion and or a gated community and have someone to do your shopping for you. And that's not the case. But those things that I do have, I've earned. You know, I haven't had help from wealthy parents or any of that stuff.
It's interesting with comedy, isn't it? Because it doesn't matter how near the top of the tree you get, that I'm very aware a lot of my friends who are comedians say, you know, it's that comparison is the thief of joy thing, that you, it's very difficult as a comic because you're all sort of mates, but equally there is that element of, oh, they're doing that. Not resentment for them, but more panic of, should I be doing that?
Should I be doing that? It's a real hard lesson to learn, and I really try to learn it, but I don't always succeed. Like, for example, I started... Hello. Come on. Well, when I started, one of my contemporaries I started with was Romesh. And we sort of started off doing all the same things at the same time. You know, did our first Edinburghs together. We did our first TV shows really together. We both did Stand Up for the Week. It was our big sort of break for both of us. All that. Then suddenly he went this meteoric sort of... And I was like, oh, see you then. And there was part of me that could have gone, seen that I failed and he succeeded.
I would never speak to him again. Dead to me.
But you can't be like that, because in this world, as you know, it's not like a job where, you know, if you start at the bottom and then you do well and you get your promotion, and it just doesn't work like that. People, it's hard work, and but it's also luck and getting a break or being what a commissioner wants at a certain time. And there's so many factors that you can't get bogged down in that. And as I said, the fact is, I'm really chuffed for Rom, and I'm really, you know, every time I see what he's doing now, although I did have a moment recently when I saw he was him and Rob were doing a thing on their Rob versus Romesh thing. We're working with an F1 team, and he knows I'm a big Formula One, but like, I grew up on motor racing and Formula One's my thing. So when I saw he was like filming this TV show with Mercedes, I texted him. I was like, okay, that's, you've gone too far now. Like, all your success, everything else, you're making it big in America, fine, I can handle that, all of that.
Yeah.
But you've just been chatting with Lewis Hamilton. I'm never speaking to you again. That's it. We're done.
It's interesting you mention Romesh Ranganathan, because he made an observation about you once.
Did he? Oh, yes, I think I know what you're going to say.
And it was to do with...
with my positive outlook on life.
So tell me, Angela, what did your good friend Romesh Ranganathan once say about your personality?
So I can't remember the exact circumstances, but I was obviously moaning about something. And he said to me, Romesh, who's not known for his bright outlook on life, let's be honest, he said to me, Christ, Angela, it's not like, what was it, the glass isn't just half empty, you've smashed the glass and cut yourself with it. It's like... And when Romesh says that to you, it does make you take stock and go, okay, maybe I am being a little bit of a negative Nancy here.
Are you a pessimist?
I am, I think, because if you expect the worst, then you're never disappointed. But I think as I get older, actually, I'm shedding that a little bit. Or I'm just sort of not being scared to sort of... I think if you worry, if you expect too much that the worst will happen, sometimes you sort of end up manifesting that. You know, if you go into a meeting with the, you're not going to give me this thing I want, so I don't even know why I'm bothering, then they're probably not going to give you the thing you want. Whereas if you go in and hold yourself like you deserve something and that you've earned something, then you might get it.
I know what you mean. You don't want to bring a sort of dark energy.
No. Although, but also I don't want to bring an arrogance. Like, I hate... Yeah. British people, we don't like arrogance. We sniff it out, and we... Particularly if you're going to go on a stage as a comedian... There are comedians who have an arrogant persona, but they're very much the butt of that joke. If you're going to be a British comedian, it's different for American comedians, I think. If you're a British comedian who has a very arrogant persona, you're sort of undercutting that. You're kind of, taking the mickey out of that a bit, because British people won't have it. They like the underdog. They like to see... I always say I want my audience to go away not thinking, oh, I wish I was like her, but thinking, oh, my life's all right. At least I'm not like her. You know, that's a much nicer feeling to come away with from a show. That, you know, oh, my life's actually all right because I haven't done the stupid thing she's done or made the mistake she's made. And I think that's a very British way of doing comedy, but there's a fine line between confidence and arrogance, and I think it's always one that you want to be really... I'm really mindful of, and sometimes been too mindful and end up not being confident enough.
Ray, will you stop looking at Angela so greedily?
Oh, I wish I had treats, Ray. I wish I did. If I had them, I'd give them to you. I'm not that mean. I just don't have any.
Ray, she's holding a poo.
You don't want a bag of poo, Ray. You really don't. Not Tina's sloppy one.
That was interesting, what you were saying just now about the comedy thing. You know, you're pleased for other people, and it's but reminding yourself that for every person that you might look at and think, well, why do they get that gig? Because it's human nature. Yeah. People are looking at you saying,
100%.
Look at Angela. She's on Live at the Apollo. She's on Mock the Week. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. We always look at how far we've got to go rather than how far we've come. And I think all human beings do that. I had this boss once who, it's going to sound really wanky, but it was such a lovely little thing she used to do. She used to go, what's today out of 10? What's your, how are you feeling out of 10 today? And you go like, oh, sort of 5. She'd be like, great, what got you to 5? Instead of like, why aren't you at 10? And I thought that was such a sweet little, she's like, because it could be 0 and it's not 0, so what got you to 5? It's like, what a lovely way of sort of framing that.
So, here's a question. What's today out of 10 for you?
What's today? I think today is a solid 7 out of 10. It's got me to 7 because I've had this flu bug that's been going round. Today's the first day I've left the house. Or last night was the first time I'd left the house in 10 days. So I was feeling really cooped up and horrible. And so today I'm still feeling a bit coldy. I'm still a bit sort of full of allergies. So that's why it's not a 10. But I'm out walking the dog. Like, there's nothing better than walking the dog, is there? For just sort of blowing the cobwebs away a bit. I'm not sat at my desk answering emails. My phone's off. So, yeah, that's taken me to a 7.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that.
It's the curse of the freelancer, isn't it? Of that, any time I'm not working, I feel guilty. Because we don't have sort of set hours. So my husband, his job is 9 till 5:30. And at 5:30, he can close his laptop and has zero guilt about playing video games or watching telly or whatever he does. But we don't have that because there's no defined your job ends at this time. And so I always think, oh, it's all very well you're enjoying yourself right now, but maybe you could have been writing some jokes or you could have been doing this or you've got a show you should be writing. And whereas this is perfect because technically this is work. Technically. But I'm just having a walk with Emily and the dog. So that's the best sort of work there is, but it doesn't feel like work.
I really hope you loved part one of this week's Walking the Dog. If you want to hear the second part of our chat, it'll be out on Thursday. So whatever you do, don't miss it. And remember to subscribe so you can join us on our walks every week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.